You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Good morning. Yeah, like Sherry said, my daughter Sophie is 12, my son Matt is 10, and so it was kind of funny putting this together, trying to remember what my kids were like when they were younger, because I'm already at the stage of my parenting where I'm starting to forget some of the stuff about when they were little, but I can also say that I'm at the point where parenting, not that it's ever easy, but as your kids get older, there are some ways in which it gets easier because they become just more mature in their relating and more able to have conversations. And so if anything, I'm at the phase now where I see little kids throwing tantrums and I'm like, oh, that's so cute. So if you have little kids and you're in the midst of it, I just want to let you know that. Yeah, my husband Scott and I have been married 16 years. So we had kids when I was in my early 30s. I was on staff with the Xenos Counseling Department for several years, but I've actually started to move out of that role as I've taken on more home church coaching. But what's interesting is talking about this idea of helping our kids with emotions, I also can kind of see the end result working with adults who have never learned how to deal with their emotions well. So I'm kind of speaking from that perspective. But really, what I'm doing today is I'm kind of giving a book review of a book called Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. You don't have to write that down because I have it all in my PowerPoint, a lot of the stuff that I'm quoting from. This PowerPoint will be available online. So if you're not able to take notes, don't worry. It'll all be put up there for you guys. And just a little bit of background. This is written by Dr. John Gottman, who is a research clinician and psychologist. He actually is better known for his work in marriages. He's the one that wrote The Relationship Cure. He wrote Seven Principles for a Healthy Marriage. And so he and his team have done a ton of research into what makes relationships work. And so what's really interesting about this book is Dr. Gottman is not a Christian. He's a secular Jew. It's hard to tell if he even believes in God. But as they say, all truth is God's truth. And so I found this book to be very helpful and very practical, just like his marriage books. I think those are excellent books and worth a read. I will tell you that if you decide to read this book, it's like many secular parenting books in that he talks about disciplining your kids, but the way he talks about discipline, it's hard to even know what he means by that because he's not even a big advocate of timeouts, and he's certainly against spanking, which I'm like, if you don't have spanking or timeouts, I don't know what you have left when you have toddlers. So if that's something that you have questions on, I actually gave a whole talk. Let's see, if Sophie's 12, I probably gave it 8 or 9 years ago, right when I was in the throes of disciplining my kids. So there's a whole talk on how to discipline toddlers and little kids if you guys are interested in that and confused on that. But that's the background, the overview there. And just to start big picture, when it comes to our kids' emotions, the first thing I want to point out is that our God is an emotional God. And so emotions are something that he designed in us as people that he created in his image. And as a person who is not always in touch with my own emotions, it has been very striking to me, especially in recent years as I've keyed in more to this idea that Jesus expressed all the different emotions when you read about him in the Gospels, both the positive and the negative. You know, he experienced joy, he experienced compassion, it doesn't record that he actually laughed with his disciples, but I'm sure that he did. But he also expressed things like anger, frustration, you know, being upset with people, and he was able to do it in a way that was good for his relationships. You know, I knew that he would express anger. It was surprising to me to realize he also did express frustration. You know, when he off the Mountain of Transfiguration, when he came down and he found out that his disciples were unable to cast the demon out of that little boy, you know what he said? He said, "How long do I have to put up with you people?" And I'm like, oh, I'm not the only one that feels that way. So to express emotions is part of our God-given design as human beings. And so we as parents want to raise kids who can both experience and express their emotions in a way that's healthy for them and also for their relationships. And so we're trying to guide them through this process. And what we're going to be talking about today is some practical steps that we can take. And, you know, this is going to take all of our lives in order to learn how to do this. And I, part of the reason I have a real burden for this is because, again, you see the problems that adults run into when they don't know how to do this. There is this book, The Coddling of the American Mind, by Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt. And they say one of the great untruths in today's society is always trust your feelings. Sages in many societies have converged on the insight that feelings are always compelling, but not always reliable. Often they distort reality, deprive us of insight, and needlessly damage our relationships. Happiness, maturity, and even enlightenment require rejecting the untruth of emotional reasoning and learning instead to question our feelings. The feelings themselves are real, and sometimes they alert us to untruths that our conscious mind has not noticed, but sometimes they lead us astray. That's the word that's missing off the bottom there. And so, again, these are non-Christians, and they're just looking at the way that people in our culture today are trying to deal with their emotions and how they're being led by them, and they're like, this is leading to a lot of problems in people's lives. And so if we can start with that idea that the end that we have in mind is to teach our kids how to deal with their emotions in a healthy, godly way, then they're not going to end up in this position where they're adults just running around being controlled by their emotions and having their emotions destroy their relationships. And really, this process will take all of our children's childhood. That what our goal is not to have kids who can deal with emotions correctly right now. What we're trying to do is raise emotionally intelligent adults. And so, yes, you know, there are kids who can handle emotions better or worse, but at any given stage, you're going to feel like, man, God is really bringing up some problems in my kid's life. And that's part of the point, is we are the trainers. We are the ones who are here to help them. And the whole point of being a child is they're supposed to be immature. Immature adults, that's a problem. Immature kids, that's almost a redundancy, right? And so we should expect that at any given stage that our kids are at, that there's going to be something that we need to help with when it comes to their emotional life. So in Dr. John Gottman's book, he talks about this idea of emotionally intelligent people. So in general, and again, these are based on scientific research studies, they've shown that emotionally intelligent people can regulate their own emotional state, that they can actually soothe themselves when they're upset. They can even calm their hearts down faster. So it's not that if you can regulate your emotions and deal with your emotions that you don't get upset about things or, you know, any state of emotional arousal, either positive or negative. But the point is they can experience that and come back to a place of stasis, really experience a great degree of stability faster and better than people without this emotional intelligence. They pointed out that emotionally intelligent children had fewer infectious illnesses, were better at focusing attention, especially when it came to times like school. They related better to other people, even in tough social situations they encountered, which kind of makes sense that, you know, if you're out on the playground and somebody says something mean to you, you're going to experience a state of emotional arousal. And so kids who had developed emotional intelligence were able to navigate situations like that and not get too upset by them. They were better at understanding people. So by being in control of their own emotions, they were actually able to recognize emotions in other people better. They had better friendships with other children, which, again, when they write it down, you're like, well, yeah, that makes sense. But these are research-driven findings. And so these are kids that, because they were able to control themselves and also understand other people, they were the type of kids that other kids wanted to be around more. Said in short, they had developed a kind of IQ that is about people and the world of feelings or emotional intelligence. And so, I mean, this is what this whole talk is about, is how to help our kids become emotionally intelligent children. He says, for parents, this quality of emotional intelligence means being aware of your children's feelings and being able to empathize, soothe, and guide them. And really, that's kind of the framework for the entire talk, is this is what we're going to give as specific steps from this book about how we as parents can be aware of our kids' feelings, and then how once we're aware of them, how the steps that follow from that are being able to empathize with our kids in what they're going through, being able to soothe them, and ultimately to be able to guide them in correct ways to respond when they're experiencing different emotions. From the book Emotional Intelligence, Daniel Goldman says, family life is really our first school for emotional learning. And so our kids are going to be heading out into the world and interacting with other people, but this really starts at home. And what they experience at home is going to be what influences how they're able to interact with other kids and other adults that are in their lives. And it's helpful to remember, it says, this emotional schooling operates not just through the things parents say and do directly to children, but also in the models they offer for handling their own feelings. And so, as important as it is to have the skills to help our kids, another thing that we have to remember is that we ourselves have to be able to recognize and deal with our emotions. Because, I mean, you guys know that it's not always what we say to our kids, but what they see in us that's going to be the greatest teacher. Points out a little bit later in the book. So our own emotional life is a really important component here. He says they were able to document that parents' awareness of their own feelings is at the heart of improving children's emotional intelligence as well. And so it is so important for us to acknowledge that we are also emotional beings, that we have emotions that are both positive and negative in general, but also about our family members, and to be able to acknowledge that. And what's really helpful is to know that the God of the universe knows exactly what you are feeling better than you do. And so at no point do you need to worry about what emotions you are experiencing, because he knows and he's aware and he has already paid for every negative emotion that you have, even if it's sinful. He paid for that at the cross through Christ's death. And so a lot of times what happens is if I experience a negative emotion, especially if it's like anger or frustration towards my spouse or towards my kids, I can feel really bad about that. And so what do? I'm like, well, I'm not angry. Well, who knows me better than anybody besides the Lord? Well, it's my kids. So they're going to be able to pick up on it. And so one of the best things I can do is acknowledge to God, I feel really frustrated right now. And what is God going to say? He's going to be like, yeah, I know. I can see that. Thank you for sharing with me. And so we can turn to God and actually have him available to help us work through whatever emotion we're experiencing in the moment. And okay, so let me just say, that's a great idea. You should be aware of your own feelings and be able to deal with them. That's all I'm going to say on that, because that's not what this topic is about. But I will say, this is incredibly complicated. And a lot of us were raised in families where we were not taught how to deal with emotions, either positive or negative. In fact, it's such a complex topic that I did an entire teaching on this. It was an XSI workshop. For those of you who have been to Xenos Summer Institute, it was actually this past summer. So XSI 2019, it was, I don't even remember what it was called, but it was something about emotions. And so the whole point was, it was about taking thoughts captive. But the point was how to work through our emotions and how to use them in a productive way. So if you need coaching on that, you can listen to that teaching and learn everything that I've had to learn over the years. So it's about being aware of our own feelings, but they say it's also about the feelings that pass between husband and wife. That's the other thing that kids pick up on. So it's not just our own emotional life, but it's our marriage that's really going to help coach kids into how to deal with their own emotions. And so what's both terrifying about that, but also part of God's design, is that our kids see everything. And they pick up on everything. And we want them to live in the reality that even if we are Christians who are following God, that doesn't mean that we don't have problems and conflict. And so for them to be able to witness that, yes, my spouse and I show affection to each other, but we also argue and we get upset with each other, but then we're able to resolve and draw close to each other and forgive each other, that's what they're going to be able to need to do as adults. And so we're not trying to present this perfect picture of people who always love each other. I mean, that's great, but that's what we'll get when we go to heaven. So in the meantime, my kids have to deal with two fallen adults who are trying to make their marriage work and trying to make their parenting work. And on the one hand, we are trying to emphasize that we are a Christian family who's living according to God's design. But part of that is Scott and I are two sinners saved by grace. And so we've got problems. We've got problems in our own lives. We've got problems in our marriage. And for our kids to be able to see the reality of that and then recognize that under God's grace, we're still able to make marriage work, I think that that can be a really hopeful thing for kids. Now, if you feel really stuck in dealing with your emotional life, or if you're running into problems with your marriage, well, Xenos has a great counseling department, but there's also other counseling clinics that, you know, we can recommend. And so if this is something you feel concerned about, get help. As a counselor, I like helping people who are running into problems where they feel a little stuck. And so the question is not, do you have problems in your life or your marriage? Because the answer is yes, you have problems, okay? The question is, would it help to get some additional help? And if the answer is yes, then that is fine. And I have benefited from getting help in both of these areas of my life. Okay, so the underlying issues, you know, we have to be people who are working on ourselves and on our marriage. But then when it comes to helping our kids, Gottman says, I call parents who get involved with their children's feelings emotion coaches. Much like athletic coaches, they teach their children strategies to deal with life's ups and downs. They don't object to their children's displays of anger, sadness, or fear, nor do they ignore them. And so we expect our kids to have good times where they're really happy. We expect our kids to have rough times where they're really upset about it, and we can be okay with that. We're not afraid of that. Instead, emotion coaches accept negative emotions as a fact of life, and they actually use emotional moments as opportunities for teaching their kids important life lessons and building closer relationships with them. And so part of what he's really arguing in this book is that times when our kids are emotional are not times when we need to step in and make sure that everything is okay. They're times where we could actually draw close to our kids and help them experience the intimacy that can come from emotional moments. Emotion coaching parents might be described as warm and positive, and that's a good thing. That's what we want to be as parents, is we want to have a warm relationship with our kids. We want to have a positive tone with them the vast majority of the time. He says, but taken alone, warm, positive parenting does not teach emotional intelligence. And so you can love your kid all you want, but there are certain skills that we need to build into our parenting to actually be able to deliver our kids. He says, in fact, it's common for parents to be loving and attentive, yet incapable of dealing effectively with their children's negative emotions. And so there are plenty of times when I see that, you know, I could love my kid from the very depth of my being. And I'm sure a lot of you guys have experienced that you thought you loved your husband or your wife, and then your child is born and you're like, I never knew that I could actually kill for my kid. And I feel that, and I sense that. And yet when it comes to something as quote unquote simple as anger or sadness in my kid, I'm like, I'm at a complete loss as to what to do. So he talks about four different common styles of parenting in terms of dealing with emotions. He actually has a test in the book. And the point is, it's helpful to realize which style of parenting you are, because to be able to recognize it means you can correct against it. And oftentimes it goes back to the way that you were raised. And so as I describe these four styles, you might recognize one that maybe your family of origin fit into, and you might even recognize that you tend towards one of these. The fourth style is going to be the emotion coaching parent, which is what we're working towards. But I don't think that any of us naturally are in that. So the first three styles are ones that I think we just naturally tend towards without trying to correct the direction we're going in. And he says the first style is what he calls the dismissing style of parenting. These are parents who treat the child's feelings as unimportant or trivial. And so, you know, they're just a kid, and so their emotions somehow are not as strong or as mature as what an adult would feel. They focus more on how to get over the emotions than on the meaning of the emotion itself. And they characteristically use distraction to shut down child's emotions. So again, none of this is out of any sort of bad motive, but what you'll see is, you know, if the kid's crying, this is the parent who's like, shh, don't cry. Or if they're upset about something, they're, you know, distracting them. Do you want a cookie? Do you want this toy? Whatever they can do to try to calm the child down, as opposed to actually trying to engage with why the child is feeling the way that they are. And in fact, I just experienced this last night, where my son was in a school program And I was trying to make a snack for it. And wouldn't you know, I was running late. And so, you know, literally pulling cookies out of the oven and carrying the hot sheet to the car and putting it in the trunk because that was the only way we were going to get to the school program on time. And we didn't get there on time. We got there like 4 minutes late. And wouldn't you know, this was the one time that anything in Xenos started on time. And so I got there and we go dashing into the gym as fast as we can. And I see Matt up on stage and we sit down and we're like waving at him like, we've been here the whole time. And he just had like this really shy smile on his face. And I realized, I think he was scared we weren't going to show up. And I think he's really relieved that we're here now. And so afterwards, I was like, did you think that we weren't going to show up? And he was like, yeah. I mean, I just wondered if something came up, but yeah. And another adult, a very well-meaning adult who really cares about him was like, oh, did you think your parents really weren't going to be here? Of course they were going to show up. And that unintentionally was a dismissing style because they were trying to make him feel better. But in doing so, was like, well, I don't know why you were worried, is kind of what that communicated. And so you see how easy it is to do that without realizing. And I think, you know, as we go through these styles, that's what I saw as I was reading this book, is the things that I do without knowing that I'm doing it can fit into these categories. So you've got the dismissing style. You also have the disapproving style. This is similar to the dismissing, but also judges and criticizes the child's, I should say, emotions. Believes negative emotions need to be controlled, and believes negative emotions are unproductive or a waste of time. And so this is, you know, this is the classic dad who tells his son that boys shouldn't cry. And I think a lot of people know that we shouldn't do that today, but that's the image that it's easy to get in our head. But especially when it comes to emotions that our kids experience that we might know are wrong, you know, because our kids are selfish and they don't really understand how people work. If they get upset about something, it's easy to try to moralize at that point and explain to our kids why they shouldn't feel that way and why they need to get things under control. And so the disapproving style of parenting, it can make the kid feel like there's something wrong with them for getting upset about different situations. And that, you know, maybe they're weak in some way. You know, I remember seeing this a while ago. I was at a sporting event and there was a kid out on the field who was having a really hard time. And so we asked the kid, are you feeling okay? And they were like, I'm having a hard time breathing. And it wasn't anything serious, but you know, you could tell they were just getting kind of worn down. And one of the parents was like, well, that's because they were playing video games all day. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure how helpful that was. And again, you could tell that the desire was to try to toughen the kid up a little bit and be like, you're okay. But unintentionally, it was communicating disapproval of how the kid was feeling right at that moment. There's also what's known as the laissez-faire style of parenting. This parent freely accepts all emotional expression from a child, offers comfort to the child experiencing the negative feelings, and is ultimately permissive, often does not offer guidance or set limits on their children's behavior. So this, at first glance, seems like the type of parent we want to be because we want our kids to know that all emotions are acceptable. But this is the parent that if the kid is throwing a tantrum, the parent will swoop the child up and be like, oh, they're just sad. And maybe they are, but you have now communicated that throwing a tantrum is acceptable and that you love them no matter what. Which we do want to always communicate acceptance to our kids, but as we'll see, the really successful parents at coaching their kids are able to communicate both acceptance for emotions and limits on behavior. And so a laissez-faire parent is not able to differentiate between the two, that not only all emotion, but all behavior is acceptable, and I'm here to love you no matter what. And any emotion that you're expressing is allowed in this family. Now, what's interesting is some laissez-faire parents, it's because they were raised by laissez-faire parents. Sometimes it's a reaction against the family that they were raised in. So what I've noticed is laissez-faire parents often come from disapproving families. And so the family has communicated emotion is bad. And so they've swung to the opposite extreme and they're like, no, emotion is good. And what's really interesting is there's a middle way. And that's what we want to try to find. Under the first two styles, dismissing and disapproving, the child learns that their feelings are wrong, inappropriate, not valid, and they may have difficulty regulating their own emotions. Or they are able to regulate their own emotions, but it's actually not regulating, it's controlling and suppressing and denying feelings, which are going to come out sideways all over the place in both kids and adults. Under the third style, the laissez-faire style, children also have trouble regulating their own emotions, partly because they never have to, because their parents are regulating for them. And so the parents are stepping in and providing the soothing, as opposed to teaching the kids how to take control of their own emotions. And ironically, it's this group more than any other that has trouble concentrating, forming friendships, and getting along with other children. Because their emotions, if you compare emotions to a river, you know, we don't want the river so deep that you can't see it because, you know, like the Colorado River going through the Grand Canyon, that is, you get down close and that is so powerful that that's going to sweep you away. And so people who repress their emotions, that's the Colorado River. We also don't want the Mississippi River that's just flooding its banks all the time and causing destruction on everything around it. The goal is for it to be a river with banks that, you know, it's there and it's acknowledged and it's used, but it's under control to a certain extent. And so, you know, if you're not sure which one you are, getting the book and taking the test in there can be really helpful, and you might be surprised which category you fall into. So the fourth style is emotion coaching, and we've described this a little bit already. But just to flesh it out before we get into the steps of how to actually emotion coach, they say when mothers and fathers use a coaching style of parenting, their children actually become more resilient. And resilient means able to bounce back from strong emotional experiences. The kids who are emotion coached still get sad, angry, or scared under difficult circumstances, but they're better able to soothe themselves, bounce back from distress, and carry on with productive activities. I actually had this really fascinating example in the book of kids who are not emotion coached, and how one way you'll see it in school is if, say, there's a fire drill. And so kids who do not learn how to regulate themselves and soothe themselves, if there's a fire drill, they kind of freak out because what is that noise? And this is a different schedule and what is happening? And then they have to go outside and they have to stand in line and they have to be quiet. And then they have to come back inside and go back to their regularly scheduled activity. And so that's a lot to ask a kid to do. And so kids who have received emotion coaching, they're like, whoa, I think that's a loud noise. Oh, they want me to go outside now. This is weird. And then they come back inside and they're like, well, that was strange. But here we are back at our regularly scheduled activity. And they're able to settle back in. Whereas kids who have not received that coaching, they're kind of off for the rest of the day. And I'm sure that if you interview kindergarten or first grade teachers, they could probably predict which kids received emotion coaching at home and which ones didn't based on how those kids respond to something like a fire drill. Said emotion coaching, interestingly, does not mean an end to discipline. Indeed, when you and your children are emotionally close, you're even more invested in their lives and can therefore assert a stronger influence. You're in a position to be tough when toughness is called for. So the disapproving style of parenting might discipline for everything, and that can be damaging to the kids. But the laissez-faire style, sometimes that's out of fear. Like, what if my kid doesn't feel loved by me? And what I've argued in other places is actually kids are crying out for limits. They're always asking, is this okay? And they kind of know intuitively what's okay and what's not okay. And so the other question they're asking, according to Dr. Henry Cloud in his book, Boundaries with Parents, is, do you love me enough to say no? And so if we're emotionally connected with our kids, it actually makes it easier to set up boundaries, because I know that there have been plenty of other times where I've related to my kids and spent time talking with them about things, so that when I have to set up a limit, then I don't feel guilty because of all the times that I've neglected them. And I know that there's weeks where I get distracted, I forget about the priority of parenting, I let other things get in the way, and then something comes up, and I know I have to say no, I know I have to discipline him in some way, and I'm like, well, I know I don't have much of an emotional connection this week because I've been distracted, and I feel bad about that. And so it makes it hard to try to set up limits at that point, whereas if I'm trying to be proactive and put time in my schedule to interact with my kids, then when it comes time to say no, I feel like I have the foundation to be able to do so, and I'm way less likely to buy into those guilty feelings. Okay. So let's talk through some steps for emotion coaching. Nice practical ideas here. Number one, the very first thing that's so important to do, and honestly the easiest one to overlook, is the need to be aware of your child's emotion. To actually key in to when your kids are feeling things. And this is one of those steps that some people are more naturally skilled at than others. Some people are more, they call it externally focused, and so they'll notice when people are feeling things or when someone's acting out. For other people, it doesn't come as naturally, but it's helpful to view it not as a talent, but as a skill, so something you can practice. And what's really interesting to me is, I have only two kids, but they really could not be more different in terms of how they express emotion. And so if I notice my daughter doing something, that means one thing. If my son is doing the exact same thing, that might mean something completely different. And so I always have to be watching and trying to assess, but honestly praying on a regular basis. God, please help me notice. And also, one prayer that I feel like my husband and I are praying often is, what is going on right now? Why are they doing this? And that can be a prayer where you're just throwing that up to God and you're basically expressing your helplessness and admitting, I really can't figure out what is happening right now and why they seem so upset this week. And so being aware, what's great about that is, again, we have God himself who we can turn to, who can help fill us in on what's going on. And he points out, children, like people, have reasons for their emotions, whether they can articulate these reasons or not. Whenever we find our children getting angry, upset over an issue that seems inconsequential, it may help to step back and look at the big picture of what's going on in their lives. That's actually one thing that's been very interesting to me about doing counseling is people actually make sense. Even if what they're doing or the way they're feeling could be considered incorrect, it's actually kind of logical if you trace it back to the underlying issues. And the same is true with our kids. And so there's reasons for why they feel the way that they do. And sometimes that's just in the moment, but sometimes you have to kind of think what has happened over the past week or the past month that could be leading to this expression right now. A three-year-old can't tell you, I'm sorry I've been so cranky lately, Mom. It's just I've been under a lot of stress since moving to the new daycare center. An eight-year-old probably won't tell you, I feel tense when you and Dad bicker over money, but that may be what he's feeling. And so if we take a step back and think, what have our kids gone through recently that could be contributing to this emotional expression? Again, God himself will key you into things that you might never have thought of. He also points out that hints of children's emotional distress may also show up in behaviors, such as overeating, loss of appetite, nightmares, and complaints of headaches or stomach aches. And so, I didn't know that. It turns out this may be a part of the reason for headaches that I had when I was a little kid was I was just holding everything in all the time. And I read this, other parenting books have mentioned this. And so now when my son complains of a stomach ache, first you rule out physical causes, of course. Sometimes you have a headache because you don't drink enough water or you haven't taken a nap. But if we can't figure out a physical reason for it, then I try to find out what else is going on in his life. And sometimes there's some stressful stuff. Now, of course, part of this is I'm 44 years old. And so what's stressful to me is not going to be what's stressful to my 10-year-old or my 5-year-old. And so part of the goal of being aware of our children's emotions is there are things going on in their lives that we do not want to evaluate from our perspective as adults. So they're going to get upset about stuff. They're going to get stressed about stuff. And it's so easy to be like, oh, that's no big deal. because I've been dealing with that for 40 years now, and you know, I've learned to get over it. And the truth is, for them, it might be the first time they've ever experienced something like this. Either way, it's going to feel way bigger to them than it does to us. And we have to remember what it was like to be 3 or to be 5 or to be 12, and to try to put ourselves in that position. And once I start viewing it from that perspective, I'm like, oh, I do remember being really upset about stuff like that when I was your age. So once you're aware of your child's emotion, he says the next step is to recognize the emotion as an opportunity for intimacy and for teaching. And so this is our chance as parents to really move towards our kids and communicate, I want to be here with you, and I want to experience this with you, and I want to help. And I think it has to be all of those. We can't jump right to the helping, because, I mean, when do we ever want that as adults? You ever have that one friend that as soon as you share something, they're like, well, if you could just do, and then you're like, this is not the person I want to talk to. And yet somehow we apply different rules for our kids, I think because we're afraid that things are going to get out of control. And the point is, actually, if we're just moving towards them and spending time with them and relating to them, that itself is going to keep things from getting out of control. And then once we're connected to them, they're going to be more open to our guidance. They point out that negative feelings actually dissipate when kids can talk about their emotions, label them, and feel understood. You know, that's part of the point, too, is because kids are young, they don't have these abilities and skills yet. And so we as parents, as hopefully the more mature people in their lives, we have the ability, the maturity, the resources to kind of absorb our kids' emotions a little bit and to express that this is understandable what they're going through. And then the next step is to listen empathetically and to validate the child's feelings. Once you can see that a situation presents an opportunity to build intimacy and teach problem solving, you're ready for perhaps the most important step in the emotion coaching process, empathetic listening. So not fixing, not condemning, but just listening. And, you know, this depends on the kid's age. So you're not going to get involved in a big, long philosophical discussion with a one-year-old. But as soon as kids can talk, they can start to tell you a little bit about what's bothering them. And the sooner you learn how to just listen and not offer advice, you know, the better it's going to be. I don't think I learned this when my kids were really little, but by God's grace, as I started implementing it, my kids responded to it. And so one thing that's really great about this is it kind of doesn't matter how old your kids are right now. You can start doing this right now. And our kids are actually very gracious with us, and they will allow us to make mistakes and then try to correct that. Statements that explain the logic of a situation flatly deny how your child is feeling at the moment. Our children feel very unreasonable things. They're not logical at all. I mean, when we as adults are feeling things, it's usually not logical. But especially with little kids, they have very short attention spans, very short memories. And so, you know, you have a birthday party for one kid and the other kid's like, well, that's not fair. And you're thinking, you just had a birthday party last month. Well, by saying that, last month feels a long time ago to them. And they've already forgotten about that birthday party. And what they see now is their sibling has all of their friends coming over and all of the attention focused on them. And that doesn't feel very fair. And so you don't have to be like, oh, well, I'll throw you a party too. What you can say is, do you feel lonely? Do you feel overlooked? I could see why that would feel unfair. That's all you got to say. I also point out that sharing simple observations usually works better than probing questions to get a conversation rolling. You may ask your child, why do you feel sad? And she may not have a clue. Okay, this was helpful for me because I did try to draw my kids out about their emotions, but they have no idea what they're feeling or why they're feeling it. They don't have that skill of introspection built into them. And so I'd be like, well, why are you so angry? And well, she and he, and this is why. And I'm like, that's not why you feel angry. But they don't understand that. So instead, what you can do is just reflect what you notice. You can say, you seem a little tired today. Or I noticed that you frowned when I mentioned the recital, and just wait for the kid's response. And again, it might not be anything logical or coherent, but you're really just trying to get them talking as much as they're capable of. Sharing examples from your own life can also be an effective way to demonstrate your understanding. And again, this is where our ability to empathize with our kids is going to come in. This actually happened. This is again, an example from last night. God was so gracious in providing me examples where I was tucking Sophie into bed, and she asked me, "Mama, do you ever feel insulted by anything?" And I said, "Nah, I usually don't feel insulted by stuff." And she said, "Oh." And then the conversation kind of ended there. And then I was working on this teaching, and I was like, shoot, that was the exact wrong response to that question for a couple of reasons. One, I wonder if there's something that she felt insulted by that day that she was trying to connect on, and I just, you know, missed it because I was tucking her into bed and kind of trying to move on. Two, I'm not insulted by much now, but that's because the Lord has matured me. And if I think back to even not that long ago, I can think of a lot of things that I was insulted by. You know, as I've grown up in the Lord, he's given me a thicker skin, but that's not what I was like on my own. And so how about I remember when I was 12, all the things that were really insulting to me as I tried to define my identity. But also, she is very different temperamentally than I am. And so she's by nature more sensitive to things than I am. And I just wasn't viewing things from her perspective. And so if I could have thought of ways in which I took things really personally, it would have been an awesome moment for a connection. So again, as we try to parent, we'll realize lots of ways we've messed up. And I think the point is, because we're under grace, we're able to evaluate those and be like, well, next time this happens, then I'm going to be more ready, as opposed to sitting around and feeling bad. I can just tell you that if you sit around feeling bad about your parenting, you're going to feel bad all the time. And so the goal is to just believe that God loves you and accepts you and wants to empower your parenting. It also helps the child to verbally label emotions. Again, they don't know what they're feeling. They just know they feel something. Studies indicate that the act of labeling emotions can have a soothing effect on the nervous system, helping children to recover more quickly from upsetting events. And Gottman theorizes, you know, you've got the two different parts of your brain. You've got the rational part and the emotional part. And the emotional part is just feeling things. And he theorizes that by trying to give those feelings labels, it kind of activates the more rational part, which can kind of quiet everything down a little bit. This doesn't mean telling kids how they ought to feel. It simply means helping them develop a vocabulary with which to express their emotions. And so instead of, well, you shouldn't feel sad, or you should feel grateful that at least, you know, this, that, or the other thing, instead, we're just trying to guess at what they're feeling. And it helps to be tentative with this. When they're younger, you can just give them kind of labels. Well, you seem upset right now. You seem angry right now. You seem sad right now. As they get older, you have to ask them, do you think that you feel sad or jealous? And let them answer. Even if you don't think that they're right, they're still trying to figure it out on their own. And we can also reassure our kids that it's often normal to feel two ways at once. Okay, I know adults who have trouble with this. Am I excited about this or nervous? And I'm like, what if it's both at the same time? And that's like mind-blowing. I actually have a friend who, when that movie Inside Out came out, and towards the end she had her happy emotion and it was touched with sadness, blew my friend's mind that that was possible. And on the one hand, we were kind of laughing and teasing her, but then I was like, but aren't we all kind of like that? That we're like, whoa, I can feel two opposite emotions at the same time. And so if I feel confused by that, again, as a mature adult, how much more are my immature kids going to feel conflicted and feel like there's something wrong with them? And so if we have the awareness of that, we can reassure them of that. And then finally, the final step is to set limits while helping the child problem solve. So yes, we're accepting emotions, we're moving towards our kids, but that is not the end goal. The end goal is ultimately to be able to help them know what to do with those emotions. Said for small children especially, problem solving often starts with a parent setting limits on inappropriate behavior. It's important for children to understand that their feelings are not the problem, their misbehavior is. And so we're, again, accepting emotions, but not all behavior. And he says, it can be helpful to think of a system of rules based on three zones of behavior. You've got the green zone, behavior that's sanctioned and desired. It's the way we want our children to act. And so we can praise them if they're sharing with another kid. We can praise them if they, you know, acknowledge how they're feeling in the moment. Yellow is misbehavior that's not sanctioned, but tolerated for either of two specific reasons. One is what he calls leeway for learners. So I don't expect my three-year-old to be able to sit through an entire central teaching, but I know that as they get older, that they'll be able to focus longer times. This one's helpful for me too. I should not expect to take my children to the movies and not have them talk through it. So I'm just prepared for that, and I'm, you know, I don't sanction talking through movies, but, you know, they're younger. They also said there's leeway for hard times. So if a five-year-old is throwing a tantrum, usually that's something that we discipline. But if they have a cold, then we're like, they're not usually like this and we can allow that. Or, you know, a kid who just changed schools and they're really having problems with their behavior when they get home. This is a helpful one to remember, that our kids lose it when they're around us because they've been holding it together all day. And so if they're having trouble when they get home from school, especially when they're first starting school in the beginning, we just try to be patient with that. And then red is behavior that cannot be tolerated no matter what. So I know you're angry, but you are not allowed to hit me or to throw things at your friends. And so to set limits on behavior in that way. I also point out that if your child resists problem solving, chances are you're rushing. Your child may still need time to express his feelings. And so if we move too quick to the problem solving stage, it can actually disrupt the ability to connect with our kids emotionally. And then think of possible solutions. Parents' ideas can be a boon, especially for younger kids who often have a hard time generating alternative solutions to the behavior that they chose to express their emotions with. But it's really important to refrain from taking over. If you really want your child to own the outcome, you should encourage him to generate his own ideas. In her book, The Price of Privilege, Dr. Madeline Levine says, too often with our children, we rush in and offer suggestions, propose alternatives, or solve problems, kind of for them as opposed to with them. While well-intentioned, this kind of premature cutting off of communication is often a result of our anxiety about letting our kids struggle. So if they're having problems with a kid at school, we want to give them solutions, when really they kind of need to learn how to figure some of that out on their own. It can also be the most expedient solutions when our own demands are great and our time is short. Unfortunately, when we intervene prematurely, we lose the opportunity to understand a bit more about who our particular child is and how developed her skills for approaching a challenge situation. And so, yes, we're trying to help our kids, but we're also trying to learn about our kids and understand them more, partly so we know what specifically to offer them, partly so we know what to pray for in their lives. And so if we're just focused on fixing it and making sure that they're okay, we're going to miss the opportunity to understand them better and what they really need, and we'll miss the chance to draw close to them. And then this helpful reminder, you don't always need words to communicate understanding. Your willingness to sit quietly with a child as the two of you grapple with feelings speaks volumes. A hug or a back rub often says more than words, especially if the child is grappling with sadness or fear. Now, again, it depends on the kid. Some kids really want comfort in the moment when they're feeling most upset. It was really hard for me as a mom to accept the fact that my son actually wanted a little distance when he was super worked up. Because what did I want to do? I wanted to hug. I wanted to cuddle. You know, after he hurt himself, I wanted to make sure that he was okay. I wanted him to sit on my lap and cry, and I could comfort him. But if he would get really upset, or even if he hurt himself, as long as it wasn't serious, what he would do was run into his room and close the door. And I'd be like, but I love you. I want to help. And as much as I wanted to draw close to him, I realized that actually could be viewed as a positive sign that he wants a couple moments by himself to calm down. And then he would let me comfort him after that, after he had already kind of dealt with his emotions on his own. And so I couldn't focus on what I needed in that moment. I had to focus on what he wanted and how best to draw close to him, because I could have forced my way in. I mean, even now, for this limited time, I'm still bigger than he is. I'm not sure I'm stronger than he is anymore. But, you know, I could have forced myself on him, but I think he would have felt smothered at that point. And so we want to figure out ways in which to draw close to our kids that they actually appreciate. And part of what's great about just being with them when they feel sad is, again, it communicates, you're sad right now. I'm sorry about that. And it allows them to actually experience emotions that are just as uncomfortable for us as they are for them. It's really sad for me when my kids are sad. And I feel like I would do anything in the world to not make you sad anymore. But then, what kind of child am I going to release into the world? A child that never experiences sadness or fear or anger? Like, how are they going to be prepared for adult interactions? That is not an adult who's able to deal with reality. And so we don't have to be afraid of our kids going through hard times, because that's part of God's preparation for them to live life in this fallen world. So those are the basic steps for emotion coaching. And so I just wanted to wrap up with a couple other general tips as we think about helping our kids with our emotions, their emotions. Freudian slip there. We're focused on them, not on us. So a couple other tips. One is, there are times not to try the full coaching process. One is when emotions are running high in either parent or child. Okay, in order to be able to empathetically listen, in order to be in the moment with your kid, you cannot be in a state of high emotional arousal. Again, recent experience for me. You know how your kids get in those fights where the fight itself is not the big deal, but you've heard the exact same fight like 3 months in a row? I was sitting in the kitchen, and it was a fight over peanut butter. Who was going to put the peanut butter away after they made their lunch? And she put the peanut butter away on purpose because she knew that I needed it. No, he never. She always. And I was like, I don't know how loud I yelled the word peanut butter, but it was not a quiet thing. And both kids got upset, and, you know, they're upset with each other. They're upset with me. Everybody's upset. So I thought, I'm going to try this emotion coaching. And so first I pull Sophie into the room. You seem upset with your brother. Well, yes, he always and he never. And I'm like, so you feel frustrated when he doesn't see what you need? And she's like, yes. And I'm like, okay, that went good. Matt, your turn. So he's trying to explain how he feels. And I'm like, okay, so you feel, and I tried to state how he felt, and he was like, how he felt, and he said, no. And I'm like, yes, that's how you felt. Okay, now it's time to brainstorm a solution. And so I pull both kids in, and they're like, well, we should just keep trying to, whoever gets it out is the one who doesn't have to put it away. And I said, so we're going to try to do the exact same thing we've been doing this whole time, and it hasn't been working. Let's keep brainstorming. And at this point, my husband senses the tension, so he's moving towards the bedroom where I'm trying to talk the kids through this. And they're like, what if we buy a monkey and train it to put the peanut butter away? And they start laughing, and all the tension is relieved for them. And I'm like, that's not funny. We need to figure out a solution to the peanut butter. And then my very loving husband said, how about I help? And sent me out of the room, and they came up with a solution. Okay. Obviously, I was way more frustrated about this fight than I ever realized. I never took any time to deal with my frustration. Instead, I just tried to help my kids, and it didn't help. And so if you are feeling upset about something, that's okay. That's normal as a parent. Just take a break. And, you know, if you try to draw towards your kid in that moment, trust me, it doesn't work. Also, if you're rushed, you know, if you're trying to get out the door and you've got something scheduled and your kid is throwing a tantrum, you could try in that moment to talk them through how they're feeling. But if they sense that you're on the clock, they're not going to open up at that point. And so sometimes it's actually better to say, I want to talk about what you're feeling, but we have to go right now. Can we come back to this? And even a 2-year-old can understand that to a certain extent, because that's not you dismissing or disapproving of their emotions. You're just letting them know right now is not the moment for us to try to get through this. And also, if you're just tired or worn out, it doesn't even have to be a high level of frustration. But, you know, if it's the end of the day and everybody's really upset, sometimes the best thing to do is just go to bed. And then when you wake up in the morning, you might not even have anything to talk through anymore. This is also a reason why it can be helpful to try to get some time alone as often as you possibly can, you know, working with other moms, seeing if your spouse can take the kids for, you know, as long as they can each week so that you just get some downtime to get refreshed and filled back up. Because this is really hard and it can be really draining because we're doing this with our kids on a regular basis. Just a reminder about screen time. We need to be sensitive and aware as parents to pick up on our kids' emotions. And if you want to feel convicted on this, just Google mom's screen time and kids' emotions, and it'll pop up all the studies that show that the more the mom is on the screen, the less connected she is with our kids. And the part of the point here is if we've got the TV on all the time, then we're not going to be in tune with our kids because they're going to be distracted too. But also, if we are always on our phones, our kids are going to notice that, and they're going to be doing everything they can to get our attention. And we also just, you know, if we're distracted, it's really in the little moments that we're going to notice stuff about our kids, even at the youngest ages. And the times when I'm on my phone, I think I notice what's going on with my kids. I don't. And so to continue to take steps in this. And what I found with my screen time is I'll read something on it, I'll be really convinced, I'll decide to act on it, and then it'll just kind of dissipate and I'll find myself going to the screen more and more. And so I just try to remind myself on a regular basis of how important it is to try to set limits on this. I'm not against screen time. I got a great phone. We have YouTube TV now, and so that's a wonderful thing. But, you know, it's something that we just want to be aware of and sensitive to. Find people you can be open with as you're trying to work with your own emotions and also as you're trying to help your kids. Again, this can be frustrating and confusing. And it can be helpful to talk to other parents who also feel confused about how to do this. And it helps you feel like you're not alone in this. It can get other people praying for you too in areas where you need help. And then finally, we need to be under grace about this. Not just about helping kids with their emotions, but about our parenting in general. You know, Paul says in 1 Timothy 1, here is a trustworthy statement deserving full acceptance. Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the worst. But for that very reason, I was shown mercy, so that in me, the worst of sinners, Christ Jesus might display his immense patience as an example for those who would believe in him and receive eternal life. You know, a lot of people, when they think of the Bible or they think of God, they think it's just a list of rules that we're supposed to follow. And sometimes as we're growing up, it's easy for us to feel like we're pretty good people and we follow those rules pretty well. I don't know about you guys, but when I got married and then when I had kids, I came right up against the fact that I'm not that good a person. I have a lot of problems. But what God had convinced me of earlier was that despite all of my problems, he wanted to be in a relationship with me, which is why he sent his son. And so when Christ went to the cross, it was to pay for all the ways in which I fall short in loving the people I care most about. And by accepting that death on the cross to apply to my life, I could be in relationship with God through Christ. And now as a parent, I don't have to pretend like I have it all together because I've already admitted to God, I'm a sinner and I need forgiveness. And so that was a one-time decision to receive Christ, but that grace is so important as I carry on in my life and in my parenting that I need to go back regularly to the fact that God sees all of my problems and all of my weaknesses. He already loves and accepts me because I've received Christ, and he wants to draw close to me in all of my struggles and all of my failures. And I can be confident in that, which then gives me the confidence to continue learning and growing in my ability to parent. So to wrap up, God has a plan for using you in your child's life, and he's using your child in your life. So you will also learn how to become more like Christ as you try to parent well. So you can become more like Christ together. Yes, we're trying to deliver our kids, but God is also at work here. And that's actually really comforting to me. So, in summary, God has given us emotions. We can embrace that fact of our design and learn to be comfortable with that. And part of our job as parents is to help coach our kids in and with their emotions. So that's Dr. Gottman's book. We have a few minutes for questions if anybody has questions or comments. I can also be available afterwards if it's more sensitive.
Something that I've found really interesting as a first-time mom is an app on my phone that's called Wonder Weeks. Mm-hmm. That helps with like leaps and like understanding like what's happening, especially with like kids that can't obviously like communicate and mm-hmm. stuff. I found that really interesting and helpful for me because I feel like that there's like so much that's going on with their like brain and their development, and they can't communicate yet, and they can't really tell you what's going on. And so for me, it's helped me to be like, oh, I'm not like failing as a parent, mm-hmm. even though I only have like a 10-week-old baby. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's some developmental stuff that's going on here, and I don't need to like freak out or worry about that. So if that's something you guys are interested in, I found it really helpful.
You said it's called Wonder Weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Wonder Weeks. And it goes through like the leap, like child development leaps mm-hmm. that happen in those like really early stages. And they can like, it actually like predicts like some of like the stormy weeks and mm-hmm. like your baby's going to be a little more fussy during this time and things like that. And so I found that to be more like, oh, okay, the baby's fine.
Mm, yep.
You know? Everything's fine.
Uh-huh.
We're all fine.
Yeah. That's great. And, you know, see, that's what's cool is on the one hand, you know, we're trying to limit screen time. On the other hand, there's really helpful apps and books that you can get that do describe the different stages. And so, man, when I first became a parent, I felt like I have no idea what I'm doing. And so to try to get a hold of as much information as possible, you know, we as a society, we just kind of get cut off from the different stages. And so we don't always get to see other people raising their kids around us all the time. And so it can feel a little overwhelming and scary sometimes. And then, like you said, to realize, oh, this is completely normal, kind of takes the pressure off. So that's great.
Thanks, Chris, for all of this. I appreciate you taking time to do this. I was also thinking and appreciative that you're talking about like the intersection between us working through our stuff intentionally and our relationship with our kids and their emotions and things like that. I think like one thing Ethan and I have really happily discovered is as we really think through and pray through, oh, what's going on with Jack here? Or what's the best way to interact with this or whatever? We've been learning so much about, this is obviously something everybody talks about, but like we learn so much about how God views us mm-hmm. and how God interacts with us. And of course, that's who we're trying to imitate, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to imitate God to our kids so that they can recognize him. And I feel like I just wanted to reemphasize that because it can be a really scary thing. It's one thing to be, I'm the adult, this is the child, mm-hmm. I have this kind of thing, but to like put yourself in that humble seat that says I don't know how to deal with this, and yeah, maybe I'm reacting to my childhood and I don't want to just react to my childhood. I don't know if I trust God about this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like working through those things and just having an authentic walk with God, a lot of these things will happen naturally. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't have to be that I know every secret of everything. It's just I'm trying to walk with God. I'm authentically mm-hmm. interacting with him. So yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to reemphasize that.
That's a great point. Thanks.
I have a question, I mm-hmm. guess. Do you have any books or recommendations on like for adults helping emotional regulation? Because like I was at the pediatrician yesterday for my daughter's 5-year checkup, and we were talking about just our choice to send her to talking about schooling, and I was mm-hmm. like, I want her to go someplace where they're gonna work on her character development and her emotional intelligence and whatnot. And the pediatrician was like, yeah, my kids are learning some of that stuff too, and they are learning way more than what I ever did as an adult. And you mentioned in the beginning too about with counseling, you know, like mm-hmm. being in the counseling, you see that if the kids don't have this emotional intelligence early on, then we see that in parents too. So do you have any book recommendations for like as adults and how we can help develop our emotional intelligence? Because obviously yeah. it's playing a key part in
yep.
helping our kids. And I know like being stable and not reactionary, and you know, there's some basic things, mm-hmm. but I guess that's a question.
Well, you know, for books, I'd have to think about that for a minute. I do know that there are great teachings available online, which honestly might be even easier. with kids at home. So there's the XSI workshops, like I talked about, and Nick Hetrick did the first one. It was a two-part workshop where he was talking about when feelings are king, and so how can we tell if feelings are even what controls our life, and then mine was the second part about what to actually do about that. And then another interesting one is, this is one that they did at the college CT. It was the Finding Peace series. And I thought that was great because, again, that was just secular science, but it was talking about what choices we can make to actually kind of live a healthy life emotionally. And so there were some good ones in there. But I've also found that working through some of the stuff from my past has been helpful. Just understanding my family of origin better, how my own choices have affected me. I think one of the classics that people go to is Dr. Cloud's book, Changes That Heal. And it just gives you a way to think about what it means to be somebody who experiences emotions, has good boundaries. There's a section on how to live in as an adult that can be really helpful. So that's a good one too. Yeah, Christine.
If you get on the resource page on the counseling stuff online, they have a list of books. Sometimes they're like specific to like what sort of emotional issue you're having.
I'm glad you said that because I'm like, people should look at that resource section, and then I just forgot about it. So
yeah, one of the ones I read on there is The Anger Trap. That was a really good book.
Oh, yep. That's a great one. Yep. Okay, one more, Ruth.
I just want to put a plug in for the workshop that you guys did at XSI about taking thoughts captive. And so we, as a women's group, we had a retreat back in October, and we just listened to those two teachings and went through the cognitive behavioral therapy worksheet. Mm-hmm. And so I've been using that worksheet for the last couple months, and I have found it to be one of the most effective tools for diagnosing and understanding my own emotions when they're overwhelming, because I grew up in a family that was a suppressor. You know, if you have a negative emotion, you suppress it, and that's how you deal with it, and that obviously has a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And so, but I feel like I've, you know, like I have tried to submit my emotions to the Lord, like as I've grown with the Lord throughout my life, but this was really helpful in diagnosing what is, like, dissecting what's actually going on in a really, like, fine hair way. And it was just, it's just been so useful. It's, like, one of the most useful emotional diagnostic tools that I've encountered. And I really just recommend learning. Like, I literally, when I get emotionally overwhelmed, I sit down with the worksheet.
Yes.
And I just read all of the cognitive distortions on the back and, like, journal through how I'm feeling those or how that's not appropriate, you know, just... But, like, as an adult, it's one of the most effective tools that I've ever encountered.
You know, it was funny because the cognitive behavioral therapy steps, I literally just typed up the steps from the back of that book, The Coddling of the American Mind. I was like, these are so good that I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. And then, yeah, just printed them out and put them in the workshop. And then that, if you go to the XSI section, I put a link to it. You know, the soft copy was uploaded. So just learning to acknowledge and then process through our emotions. It's a skill and it takes time, and I feel like I'm still learning how to do it. But yeah, that's cool. Okay, well, how about I do this? How about I pray for us? And then if anybody else has any other questions, I can be available afterwards too. Lord, it still surprises me sometimes how emotional you are. But thanks that you made us in your image. And so we can trust that if that's how you designed us, then it is good. Lord, we want to be people who are emotionally healthy people. And we want also to raise kids that are able to experience and express the full gamut of emotions, but in a way that's going to enable them to actually draw close to other people and have healthy relationships. And so I pray, Lord, that you would help us be under grace about this, things that you never expect perfection from us. And so pray that we would both be able to draw close to you as the person with perfect emotions, and also grow in our ability to help our kids process and also to draw close to them so we can have a great relationship with them. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.